You're listening to Panel Borders. This is the extended podcast version of Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of comics. I'm Dickon Harris, and in this episode, you're going to hear a couple of interviews I recorded with Small Press creator Gareth Brooks. In the first interview, which was recorded at the Small Press Expo in Bristol in this spring, we're joined by Steve Tillotson, and we talk about their recently published comic, The Banal Pig Landscape Anthology, as well as their other titles, including The Manly Boys Annual, Can I Borrow Your Toilet, and Man Man. In the second interview, recorded more recently at the Alternative Press Fair Collaborama in Borough, I'm talking to Gareth about the zine scene in general and performing his own work live on stage in the form of poetry.
Resonance FM is London's only non-profit community radio art station who need your donations to help keep the station and podcasts on air. All the program makers and all the engineers all work for free to bring you shows as diverse as The Bike Show, The Free University of the Airways, Hooting Yard, Resonance FM accepts donations in the form of cheques, credit and debit cards, bank transfers, PayPal and cash. Go to www.resonancefm.com for more details. We also accept hobnobs and teabags. Your donation means our continued existence.
Hi, this is Dickon Harris. I'm here at the Bristol Comic Convention. We're in the Small Press Expo, and I'm sitting with two of my favourite creators, Gareth Brooks and Steve Tillotson.
Hi, Dickon.
Hey, guys. And they're the creators together of... Steve does Banal Pig comics, and Gareth does Man Man, and they both work under the Banal Pig comics brand. We're in the... I think it's one of the hotels on the fifth floor, so it's a bit unusual for a comic convention just off the bat.
Yeah, I don't think it's that good in terms of people wandering off the street, seeing as it takes about 10 minutes to get here. But it's a nice enough venue, and it's well laid out and everything. But we've not had that many guests so far, or punters.
Just take me through the table, because you got all your stuff laid out here. You know, if I was interested in the Banal Pig comic stuff, what is there actually?
Well, we always like to peddle the new stuff first of all, and for this con, I've got the Banal Pig Landscape Anthology, which is a collection of a few really good creators. We've got Stephen Collins, who's got an excellent thing in here. He's a kind of illustrator who's not really done much cartoon work before, but the story's really, really great, and I'm really too happy to have it in there. Obviously, Gareth's got something in here as well, and we've got a few prose stories. Oliver East, the Trains of Mint guy, Paul O'Connell. He's really good.
Paul O'Connell's good. I've seen him do some really... He's done some amazing stuff. I love that... He was in that Expo with that Giraffes on Ice. Yeah. Have you seen that? That was a great... That was my favourite. That's such a good strip in that show. Anthologies vary. I mean, I put together an anthology, and that's black and white photocopy. This is quite glossy in colour. I mean, is that something you got kind of moving towards? Because your early editions... I mean, I'm picking up Banal Pig 1 here. And that's, you know, this is black and white. It's still, you know, fairly heavy card. But then you compare it to your latest stuff, which is, you know, glossy, it's, you know, full colour. I mean, what's the ambition here? Is it to just present it in as good light as possible?
Well, it sort of comes with experience as much as anything else. I mean, the first ones that we were doing really didn't have a clue what we were doing, so it was just a case of taking it to a print shop and, you know, asking their opinion. And obviously, print shops don't necessarily print comics either, so, you know, it's a case of kind of learning as you go along, really. And so the good thing about the comics that I'm doing now is that my dad actually works at a printer's, so he can sort of sort me out with a good deal. And, you know, it just looks more professional, I think. Like, firstly with a colour cover, but, you know, maybe working towards full colour stuff that's a bit more kind of effective.
Yeah, you live and learn, and you just get better. You know how things are going to work out. I mean, the first Banal Pig took us like a year to get together, and like nearly didn't happen really, because like we didn't really know what we were doing. But now, you know, we do new comics all the time, and they're much better.
Is it quite like a brand following? You know, because you've got quite a few sort of comics out there. And this is now when I've seen with you guys for a while that you get people come up and go, "Oh, what's the latest issue?" You know, are you getting a lot of your business? Is it repeat business then from sort of fans already?
I hope so, yeah. I mean, we do recognise faces and stuff, but because the comics are like widespread, you know, people can pick them up in London or like Newcastle Travelling Man or something like that. You don't immediately identify the people, you know, but I just hope that, you know, from what we do on the internet and, you know, just from having this stuff out there, that, you know, people do kind of pick it up and like it, and that's as much as you can hope for, really. And if they like it, they buy another one, you know.
I realise I should probably try and explain the product a bit better. I realise that not everyone in the world knows what Banal Pig is, even. You guys do something very different. I think, to a lot of the stuff that's out there, because it's slightly offbeat humour. Why don't you explain it?
Yeah, I think, like, the banal pig thing is, it's just, like, it's dark. It's just, like, bad things happen to unfortunate characters, and then, in the end, something even worse happens to them, you know? So I think my stuff's kind of similar, but it's a bit more... It's a bit more sort of self-deprecating,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, more domestic in context, I'd say. It's not as fantastical.
But like, as we've gone on, we've sort of honed our, you know, ideas. So, like, when we did The Manly Boys, we both kind of knew exactly what we wanted to do, which was to kind of, like, do a sort of pastiche comic that kind of pokes fun at gender stereotypes, I suppose. That's not too much of an intellectualisation.
Yeah, because I think our work is actually quite far apart in it, you know, style, but the content is ultimately very similar, and, you know, we've always been very sort of similar in outlook, and we contribute to each other's stuff. So I think, you know, it did come together well on the Manly Boys one, which was, we brought that out for the Web Mini Comics thing in March. Which is the last big one we did.
We're thinking of doing a girls one, provisionally entitled Comely Girls.
Yeah. Comely Girls?
Comely Girls.
Because people were all asking us at the Web Mini Comics thing, oh, are you going to do one for girls, or are you going to do a follow-up? So, yeah.
Because I bought this quite recently, and it's brilliant. It reminds me of those, was it Jenkins? Do you remember that whole series about that kid who gets up to all those scraps and misadventures? What's his, you know the...
Just William.
That's it. It's just in that kind of vein.
Yeah.
Because, like, the first thing we did was, like, there's this George Orwell essay called, what's it called? Boys Weeklies. And, like, if you read that, it kind of, like, totally sums up, like, the whole boys' comics and, you know, the kind of literature that was out there, you know, in sort of 1950s or between the wars for young boys and that. So, like, that was a starting point of it, I think. And, yeah, like, that whole, what's his name, that fat... The fat
Billy
owl
Bunter.
Of Billy Bunter.
Yeah.
I just love that stuff. It's cool.
From your sort of very starting point, though, you're not trying to, I don't know, record your personal life. It's not like a sort of personal autobiographical comics. Although you do touch on that a little bit of Man-Man. We discussed that yesterday. But it's more really, I suppose, like, if you think about the Beano as a starting point, as a sort of, like, an easy reference.
Yeah.
And then it's... Well, you explain it best than I can.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the kind of thing that I read. I mean, I'm not into, you know, the standard superhero kind of things at all. And I grew up reading the Beano and the Buster, and that's what's informed my comics, you know. It is that kind of recurring characters, and they are kind of cartoony in style, you know. It's not, you know, slice of life or anything like that. But that's not to say I don't incorporate things that I've seen into it, but it's more, you know, try to make it more universal, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of your characters, they're completely confused, they're completely bedolled. Most of the time they don't realise why these things are happening to them. You know, the sense of humour, you laugh at them, but, there's a fondness for them. And,
yeah.
I mean, just take us through some of your funnies.
Yeah, well, the funnies was actually a thing I wanted to do. I wanted to see if I could actually do a newspaper strip, do something once a day, you know, just really churn out ideas. And I did it every day for a month, and posted one every day. I was literally, like, drawing it in my lunch hour at work, and then colouring it when I got home, and then sort of posting it the next day. I think it works quite well, but it is, yeah, like you say, it is kind of... A lot of it comes from using recurring characters, and kind of the first time you see the character, it kind of sets up the joke. And then the next time and the next time, it just kind of goes way past that, and, you know, really kind of hammers it home, the, you know, the pathetic existence that these people live. A lot of it is about pathos, I think, as well. I don't know. It's difficult for me to talk about my own stuff. Yeah.
But, I mean, it's Crying Dogs, which is quite a funny one. This is about it's a particularly violent dog that cries all the time. I suppose, but the best thing is maybe to get to the website, because then you can actually look at a lot of these, can't you?
It's banalpig.com/funnies. They're all on there. And there's some guest strips by other artists as well, so that's, you know, it's well worth a look, I think. That's where my blog is and everything as well. But.
Okay. Tell me a bit more about your stuff, because you've got the Man-Man series, and this is a really fantastic series in its own right. I remember first picking it up, and I went to the comic shop, and you just see, you know, Superman in his tights, you see Spider-Man, and then I see the Stick Man, like, taking a dump. and I was like, what? And it's this, you know, really pared-down style that just, you know, no one's doing Stick Man like you do.
Well, that's good. I sort of started it because I didn't really think I could draw, and I sort of found out I could draw later on. So it's just a way of like getting stories out there. But I think when I started it, I was kind of a bit angry, and I wanted to show that the reason the world's in such a state is because of the average person. So I made this character who's like totally politically ignorant, apathetic, stupid, cowardly, greedy, and everyone loved him. You know what I mean?
And everyone immediately associated it with Gareth.
Yeah, totally.
Well, what happened the other day? I mean, last week you were in the Zine Festival. What happened?
Yeah. Oh, well, my girlfriend overheard a couple talking, and they were saying, "Oh, the girl said to her boyfriend, oh yeah, I met him, the guy that makes it. He's exactly like I imagined him." I was like, oh, shit. Oh, I don't know if that's good or what.
But I think the stick man drawings are successful as well, because I mean, ultimately there is quite a lot of stick figure cartoons and that are pretty weak. But I think it's the quality of the writing that really makes it successful, and the fact that with a stick man you can project your own imaginings onto it, and that's ultimately, I think, exactly. The writing's got to be there.
You can't really tell. I mean, you know he's probably what he's probably like, but you know, it's not like you can stereotype him by the way he dresses. You don't know. You can't really make. He could be anyone. You can't make any judgments about who he is from what he looks like, because he's a stick man. You know. But you know, I'll get more positive feedback about Man Man than anything else. Like, people really like him, which is like, it's cool. But in the past, I've been a bit, you know, because like, I've always made artwork and like tried to do serious writing and serious stuff, and the one time I do a stupid stick man about embarrassing the stuff that happens, everyone's like, yeah, this is great. But, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles.
It's kind of deceptive, because if you pick it up you think, oh wow, really simple, but actually it's an artist doing like stick man figures. I've seen guys just try and draw and, you know, boom, they'd be like all over the shop. You'd actually make it's quite deliberate. I mean, that's because design challenges as well in that, so it's very attractive when you pick it up, and there are a certain set size, and you know, it's very simple. I'm thinking about Ronnie Purple, maybe, or
Purple Ronnie. Yeah. I mean, I think the thing with Gareth as well that needs mentioning is the other works, like, you know, Can I Borrow Your Toilet and The Smell of the Wild, that are much more ambitious as kind of book works. They're not even what you could consider proper comics, because they're like text and image and that sort of thing. Again, it kind of, I think it pushes the kind of medium of comics a bit further, really.
Yeah, the way I look at it is like, I think comics, with anything that's got writing and drawing, and I think it's a bit weird that like there's not more out there that push, because I kind of think like cave painting's kind of comics, it's a narrative. The Bayeux tapestry's a comic, you know. It's like there's this big history of stuff that existed, you know, even before Superman, do you know what I mean? And like, you know, if you go in the V&A, there's all this sort of stuff, narrative, image based stuff that, you know, you could call that comics. And you know, the British Museum, and I think like I'm not saying that I'm trying to like revive that, but there's, you know, like, comics are more than comics, if you see what I mean.
Certainly as a medium, I mean, there's a tendency to fall into certain camps, and even in the small press scene. I mean, what I like about your guys' stuff is that it is different. I mean, appalling nonsense, the Can I Borrow Your Toilet, which is the history about you working in that factory. What I liked about that is that there are zines out there that have comics and that mix a bit of text, but this is, it's just quite well told. I mean, there's the humour behind each character, and everyone can relate to be working in an awful job. Explain the kind of idea behind it, because you did mention it when I first interviewed a while ago.
Right, well, I mean, I think the idea behind it was just like, I was working this job, and I was working, a friend of mine was working with me, and he just said, I think we just said, like, God, you know, so many characters we know, so many funny things have happened, like, you should just do a comic about that. And I was like, yeah, you know. I mean, everything in it is pretty much true and happened, you know. I think that's a good writer would just, there's things that you can't make up. A good writer, like, just nicks things from life, and just stuff that happens, you just write it down.
But it's putting it into context as well. I mean, it's not just I did this. It's kind of, it's a flowing narrative as well. I mean, that's what you do, really. Take things that you experience, but, you know, form them into something that's a bit more interesting.
But you're not really there. I mean, you're there as a sort of as an observer, but you're not putting yourself first. It's all these characters are there primarily. That's the sort of, that's the nature of the book.
Totally, yeah. Because, like, you know, I mean, that's the, that's the point, really, is that, like, yeah, it's a terrible job, but it's the people, the stories and the people that make you redeem it, you know. It's kind of, however bad things get, if, as long as you keep your sense of humour, you're all right.
All my jobs have been pretty much terrible. My last job was working in a storage centre, which was horrendous. And, yeah, it's just the thing where you do the... I make artwork in my spare time and do a crap job to pay the bills, basically, and that's pretty much been it since I left college. So, yeah,
fair enough.
I mean, same here. Like, all my jobs are a little bit boring, but I think it does make you hungry to, when you get home, to do it. You know, so to make yourself more than just this job that you're doing. You know. So,
I'm amazed by the discipline, because you said you drew all your funnies during your lunch break.
Yeah.
How do you switch off? Because I've done this before, yeah, and I find, like, I look at my clock and I'm like 2 hours late for work. You know, it's quite easy, and then get back into it.
I had to do it. I used to sit there, and luckily there weren't many people around, so I could just sit there. There was a table, put my headphones on, and just switch off. It really helped me, actually, to stop getting wound up by it all. So, yeah, I found it therapeutic as much as anything else, you know.
I think I've got a bit of a personality disorder. I get really, really angry and miserable if I don't work. I can go about 2 or 3 days, and after that I start getting a bit itchy, and I need to draw or do something.
Yeah, I'm the same. I've really got the urge for it. And I think if you were doing it, I mean, I've never been an illustrator or, you know, or doing that sort of thing, but if that's your job, it becomes work. And once it is work, it's not fun, and, you know, it's not interesting, and you're not driven. I don't think you could do it 8 hours a day and then go home and want to do it more. So I think in one way it's an advantage having something that's completely different to what.
Plus, you can do whatever you like, so you don't have to worry about money or, like, wherever the money comes from. You've got to worry about that person, what they're going to think about it. But if you just do it non-professionally, you can do whatever you want, and that's the cool thing about small press. I think I'm not that interested in comics that just are versions of what's already there in the mainstream. I'm interested in, like, comics and zines that couldn't be published by a proper publisher because they're too weird or whatever, you know. That's what interests me about small press.
Totally.
But I'm interested in things that are between two things, you know, something that, is that a comic, is it a zine, you know.
It's transformed it, really, hasn't it, the sort of scene. Definitely, the sort of, and I think it is, particularly small press is moving away from these kind of conventions to the kind of, you know, the 100% small press thing, you know, just done in a working men's club or wherever, where it's free to get in. You know, there's hundreds of people there just milling about, and it really opens it up to more of an audience, I think.
And also more creators, because I think, like, the overall message that we're trying to get out is that, like, you know, it doesn't matter if you make a comic, it doesn't matter if you make money, the point is you've done it. And, like, by doing stuff, it makes your life richer. By drawing, you see the world around you in a different way. By writing, you understand yourself better. So it's just important that people don't just buy whatever they're spoon-fed by society or culture or whatever. They make their own culture. I think that's really important, just to the general population's happiness.
Because I think our customers aren't necessarily people who buy comics. They're everyone, you know. They're just people who are interested in art in general, or, you know, just having something nice to look at and read, and, you know, that sort of thing. You don't have to have a background in comics to you know, like this sort of stuff. And, you know, it's not even just comics, is it? It's zines and, you know, any kind of small press that's sort of included with it.
Cool. All right, guys, I'm gonna wrap it up there.
We're sitting under a bush. It's we got a typical English summer, so it's raining. I managed to convince eminent small press creator Gareth Brooks to sit on a bush with me. We're just part of the Collaborama event, which actually you were involved with and setting up with Jimmy Gherkin.
And Shabs. And Kerry May, actually. So there's five of us.
And it's been a massively successful day, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, it's been pretty good. I think all the events so far have exceeded our expectations. So, yeah, it's been good. And everyone, there seems to be a lot of outside parties coming along interested, and a lot of people getting converted to small press that didn't really know anything about it before. So that's good. Cool.
How about the... Because you did the Are You Zine Friendly, which was quite fun. This was a... Well, you explain the idea, really, because it was held at the Foundry in Old Street on Thursday night, and as part of the sort of 5-day comic festival. So So talk me through it. What is Zine Friendly?
Well, the idea is to get people, because back in the 70s and 80s, people just used to like go up to other people in gigs or, you know, everywhere you went, so I'm told, you'd see zines everywhere and everyone was making them and doing them and selling them. And now it's not like that, because I think people are a bit scared to just sell things in pubs and to approach other people and say, look at my zine. Partly because no one really knows what a zine is, and partly because people probably think it's illegal, you know, like, so we're trying to like find lots of different places all over the country, hopefully, that would be up for like just having people come in and sell their zines or like hosting events or doing whatever, and then once we've identified those places, people can just go and do events there and it won't be so much hassle for them to organize and take the initiative.
Sweet. I suppose the idea, are you zine friendly, kind of sets the question, you know, and obviously you get, I imagine a lot of people have been asking you what's a zine this week. Is that a lot?
Yeah, well, yeah, we have, but you can just show them then. I mean, yeah, a lot of people don't really know what it is, but, or they think that, they remember in the 90s when people were still doing them, they were more music related, but I think that's a question that creators have as well. What is it? Because it's changed a lot. It used to be just a punk music thing. People were making them, or radical, you know, politics. People were making them because there was no one in the mainstream writing about those bands or about writing about those politics, whereas now it's not so much like that. You've got art school zines, you've got like people just doing diary zines, you still got people doing music and radical politics zines, and that's cool, but a zine can be whatever you want, so that question's just as relevant to creators as it is to, you know, the general public, I think.
I've just grabbed you particularly for one event, because I think one you did was quite interesting, which is Kerry Run, really, which was the spoken word zine. I mean, this is the idea that poets who do zines and small press stuff really get sort of a platform. And you've actually written an illustrated poem, effectively. I actually got a copy of this, but I think, if I remember right, just as, this is from having read it 3 months ago, Smell of the Wild?
Yeah, Smell of the Wild. Some people call it Call of the Wild, but that's kind of, yeah.
What do they know?
What do they know, eh? But yeah, I read this out at Kerry and Chris's Spoken Night Out event last night. It was my first poetry reading. I was a bit nervous, but they did an excellent job, and it was an amazing night. And me and Jimmy and Peter both, we've all write poems, apparently. None of us knew each other did it, but now we're all poets, as of yesterday, so that's really been positive. We're poets, and we didn't realise it.
What's awesome? Let's just take it out. I mean, this is lovely because it's got a silt print screen.
It's like stencil, actually. It's just cut out of acetate and stenciled on with just cheap acrylic paint and a sponge.
And you've got some really nice sketches as well of your style of just slightly beguiling pictures of nature, and then wham, yeah. Hard verse.
I've had some people think that it's serious and sort of come up to me and say, either say, your poetry's not that good, or say, oh, I really love it. It makes you feel like you're there in the countryside. I don't know what to say to those people, really.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I could say that. That's probably what I do say.
I like the way that people will go up to you and say, your poetry's crap. Because that's brilliant. That's like real constructive feedback right there.
Because your poetry has to be really bad for people to tell you. So that's the result.
Do you think... I think there's kind of space for this kind of area. I mean, this whole sort of zine poetry. I think it's kind of the most exciting area, really, because I think there'd be scope for future events focused primarily on this.
Yeah, I mean, one of the points of the festival is to, like... You know, there's lots of different reasons people make small press, you know. Some of them are poets, some of them are comic makers, zine makers, and some of them are like just writing about radical politics and stuff. And the reason that they do small press is because there's no room for them in the mainstream. So part of the point of this was to get everyone together and to make everyone realise that it's kind of a grey area, you know, where all this stuff can meet. Because, I mean, most of us met on the small press comic circuit, and we're a bit bored of, not of comics, because comics are cool, but just the sort of, you know, classic comic convention, you know, it wasn't really catering for what we wanted to do.
I think there's something really nice about this particular event, and what I like about it is that it's creating its own scene and stuff as well, that will follow on. No, thanks a lot for this, and yeah, keep it up. For more information about Gareth and Steve's comics, please visit either www.gareth.com appallingnonsense.co.uk or www.banalpig.com/banalpig.com.html or Google Banal Pig, both of which are linked to from our blog, which is www.panelborders.wordpress.com. We can also hear Gareth perform his poems Smell of the Wild and Jolly Bear in Gemma Cantlow's Stand-Up Comics Part 1. At the Alternative Press Fair, I also record interviews with poet Kerry May and comic book creators Paul Rainey and Paul Ashley Brown. And you can hear those in a special clear spot on Resonance FM in November. Also in November, be sure to check out a couple of great small press events in London. The first of these is the Handmade and Bound. This is coming up. This is the Affordable Book, Arts and Zine Fair on the Sunday, the 1st of November at the St. Aloysius Social Club near Euston. Following that, we've got the Small Press Comiquette on Sunday, 8th of November. This is part of the fortnight-long Comica Festival at the ICA on the Mall in central London. And last but not least, on Thursday, the 12th of November, we've got Are You Zine Friendly? This is an alternative press event at the Foundry in Hoxton, promoting a new small press web resource, the Zine Friendly blog, and that's 86 Great Eastern Street. For more information about all these events, check out the legendary Jimmy Gherkin's blog at comicandzines.wordpress.com, and you get all the information you need. Okay, thanks for listening.